Welcome back to All Things Considered. I'm Andrea Seabrook. This election year defies conventional politics in a lot of ways. One of the most striking, a voting bloc that's been loyally Republican, could be up for grabs: evangelical Christians. Many evangelicals have misgivings about John McCain. In fact, most of the movement's leaders backed Mike Huckabee in the Republican primary. At the same time, Democrat Barack Obama is actively courting religious voters and talking freely about his faith. Last week, Obama said he would keep the White House Office of Faith-Based Initiatives and expand it. That sometimes controversial program was a pillar of President Bush's first term. Jim Wallace was involved in that program early on. He's an evangelical Christian preacher, but he's not a social conservative. Thanks for coming into our studio.
Great to be here, Andrea.
Let's be clear from the beginning here for our listeners. You are not like most other evangelical Christians who comment regularly on politics.
Well, I would say that more and more evangelicals are talking about the broader, deeper agenda that has concerned me for a long time. There's no longer a focus on just two issues, abortion and gay marriage. Poverty is now an evangelical issue. HIV/AIDS, Darfur, climate change, Iraq. And the changing of the agenda, particularly the emergence of a new generation of evangelicals, really will change the whole character of the conversation this year.
Jim Wallace, have you endorsed a candidate?
No, I haven't endorsed. Martin Luther King Jr. Helps me on this. He never endorsed a candidate, but he always asked them to endorse the agenda of a movement. So we're trying to build a movement. We're asking both candidates to commit to cutting poverty in half in 10 years and supporting the Millennium Development Goals on global poverty. These are things we want them to do. And so we're pushing the candidates on these questions. I've known Barack Obama for 10 years. I would say we're friends. But I haven't endorsed. And I think, Lyndon Johnson wasn't a civil rights leader until Martin King and Rosa Parks made him one. So I think no matter who wins the election, they won't be able to change the big things until there are social movements pushing and pressing from the outside.
You wrote in your blog this week about Barack Obama's plan to continue partnerships between government and religious institutions. You sounded pleased.
Well, Barack Obama, a lot of the pundits said this is part of his outreach to evangelicals. What they don't understand is that he was a community organizer on the south side of Chicago working with congregations. He could see the impact of the role of churches and synagogues and mosques in the community. And so he wants to make that even more powerful. And I was pleased that it wasn't the sort of sometimes the Democratic habit of going secular, and Bush's faith-based initiative was disappointing. So the Democrat might have said, we're going to get rid of that and just say all we need is good public policy. Mm-hmm. You need a partnership. Civil society has to be involved.
But one of your criticisms of President Bush's Office of Faith-Based Initiatives was that it ended up supporting organizations that mostly agreed with him politically. Why would you expect a President Obama's Office of Faith-Based Programs to do any different?
Well, that'd be a mistake. And if that happens, he needs to be held accountable by many of us who will be on the outside. But this shouldn't be politicized. Fighting poverty should be a nonpartisan issue and a bipartisan cause. We need people on both sides of the aisle here. We really do.
We've talked a lot about Barack Obama in this conversation. Let's talk about the Republicans right now. So have you gotten any indication from John McCain or his campaign that he will pursue partnerships with religious institutions as well?
Well, John McCain hasn't spoken, I don't think, on this issue yet. I am hoping that he will. Bill Clinton, Al Gore, and George Bush have all been for this. Now Barack Obama's for it, too. There's no reason why John McCain shouldn't also be in favor of a good, positive, faith-based initiative.
Conservative evangelical leaders met in Denver last week to try to rally around the candidacy of John McCain. The group sent him a letter urging him to choose Mike Huckabee, himself a Southern Baptist minister, to choose him as McCain's running mate. Would you be happy to see a minister in the vice president's office?
Well, Ted Strickland, who I had breakfast with a few weeks ago, governor of Ohio, is a former minister, and I don't see him imposing his Methodist faith on the people of Ohio. Somebody who's been a minister shouldn't be disallowed to become an elected official. I liked a lot of things about Mike Huckabee. I'm actually going to talk to him next week because we talked to both sides.
We meaning your group, the Sojourners.
Sojourners and Call to Renewal. I'm talking regularly to Republicans and Democrats about how to focus the nation's attention on those who are poor. And this is, for me, a gospel agenda, but it also can bring political leaders together from both sides of the aisle.
Jim Wallace is an evangelical pastor and head of the social justice group Sojourners. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Good to be here.
There is a slow-motion power struggle happening in the Anglican Communion. This weekend, conservatives in the 77-million-member denomination announced what might be called a hostile takeover. NPR's Barbara Bradley Haggerty has the story.
When nearly 300 bishops from Africa, South America, and breakaway churches in the United States gathered in Jerusalem last week, the big question was, will they declare schism from the more liberal churches in the West? Archbishop Greg Venables, who oversees several countries in South America, says the answer turned out to be easy.
We all sat around the table, and pretty well with one voice, we said, we are not leaving the Anglican Communion.
Why not, after all this talk of theological divorce?
Because we are the true Anglicans. We just don't accept that we can hand over the franchise of Anglicanism to people who've suddenly, in a unilateral way, have decided to create a new version of Anglicanism.
That new version that liberal Anglicans embrace is a modern interpretation of Scripture that allows for gay clergy and same-sex blessings. With the two sides unwilling to compromise, the conservative leaders aimed two shots across the bow. First, they declared that they no longer see the Archbishop of Canterbury as the one who decides who is Anglican or not. Second, they said they intend to form an alternative church or province in North America, one that would compete with the Episcopal Church for members, money, and church property.
Things don't become so because they say they are so.
Jim Naughton is the canon for communications at the Diocese of Washington, D.C.
They can decide that they are naming their collection of churches a province, but that doesn't mean the rest of the world will regard them that way. All these folks have managed to do is put a bow on the status quo and call it a present.
Naughton says neither the Archbishop of Canterbury nor the rest of the worldwide communion would allow foreign bishops to carve out a new church in the U.S. without permission from the Episcopal Church. In fact, the Archbishop of Canterbury warned conservatives today that they were treading on thin ice, to which Martin Minns, who moved his Virginia parish from the Episcopal Church to the more conservative Church of Nigeria, says,
"Who's going to stop us? We don't have ecclesiastical jails these days. There's freedom of religion, a freedom to associate, and a freedom of religious expression."
And freedom to let people choose which form of Anglicanism they like. Which brings us to the undercurrent of this debate, says Gene Robinson, the openly gay bishop of New Hampshire whose election sparked the current crisis.
Let's not be too naive about this all being theological and biblical argument. This is also about money and property.
Dozens of parishes have left the Episcopal Church and moved under the authority of foreign bishops, and some have tried to keep their property and buildings worth millions of dollars. On Friday, a Virginia judge ruled that 11 breakaway churches have a constitutional right to keep their properties. If conservative churches can create an alternative province in the U.S., Robinson says, that would strengthen their arguments in the courts. But Robinson and others are taking a historical view. He says time and again, in debates over things like the prayer book or women's ordination, conservatives have said the end is near.
There have been lines drawn in the sand before, or a Donnybrook is predicted, and then it doesn't happen.
But the conservatives claim close to two-thirds of practicing Anglicans, and their numbers are growing. And eventually, they say, their views will prevail. Barbara Bradley Haggerty, NPR News.
Good morning, I'm Ari Shapiro. Last May, authorities seized hundreds of children from a polygamous compound in Texas. Footage was all over TV, and people across America shared the same thought. Where did they get those fabulous clothes? Now they can be yours. The women of the FLDS community have set up a website to sell their modest apparel. It has pictures of kids wearing sporty button-up shirts, buttoned all the way up.